This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery.
Hello and welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for March 26, 2010. I'm Carol Chowdhury and I will be reading synopses of two case reports, two clinical articles, and a technical note which were published online today by the Journal of Neurosurgery. This case report is titled Infected Giant Ophthalmic Artery Aneurysm Remnant Following Craniotomy for Surgical Clip Ligation. It was written by Atif Huck and colleagues. Postoperative infections following intracranial aneurysm surgery are relatively rare. Most cases are usually associated with implanted foreign bodies. The authors present a case, however, that demonstrates the possibility of a deep intracranial infection associated with an incompletely resected mass. The authors present the case of a patient with a giant ophthalmic artery aneurysm that was surgically clipped. This was performed by detachment of the bulk of the aneurysm fundus in order to recreate an aneurysm neck. Because of the size and location of the aneurysm remnant, it was left in place. However, this devascularized remnant served as a nidus for an intraaneurysmal abscess. The aneurysm remnant was subsequently resected, and the culprit organism was found to be a gram-positive rod common to skin flora. This case highlights the balancing act between leaving behind a large intracranial mass versus assuming the potential morbidity of resection, especially with regard to a mass that has been significantly devascularized. This case report is titled Temporal Neocortical Origin of Pilomotor Seizures in Association with an Infiltrating Glioma, a case confirmed by intracranial electroencephalographic monitoring. It was written by Sandeep Mittal and co-workers. Patients with seizures occasionally present with autonomic symptoms. These manifestations may include cardiovascular, respiratory, gastrointestinal, pupillary, sexual, and/or genitourinary symptoms. Cutaneous autonomic symptoms typically include pallor, flushing, sweating, and goosebumps. Prominent autonomic symptoms manifesting as cold shivers and goosebumps have been reported to occur in 3.6% of patients with temporal lobe epilepsy. However, piloerection as an isolated or principal clinical feature of seizures has seldom been reported. It is hypothesized that many of these ictal alterations in temperature regulatory mechanisms are the result of epileptic discharges arising from limbic regions, including the amygdala, anterior insula, orbitofrontal cortex, and anterior cingulate. A variety of structural lesions have been reported to cause ictal goosebumps, including brain tumors, hippocampal sclerosis, post-traumatic gliosis, infectious diseases of the CNS, metabolic disorders, cavernous malformation, tuberous sclerosis, cortical malformations, and radionecrosis. Despite this diversity of underlying structural anomalies, there is mounting evidence for a temporal lobe origin of the epileptic focus. The authors report on a patient with isolated pilomotor seizures who was monitored with intracranial EEG. They discuss the localizing and lateralizing significance of these unusual autonomic seizures. Pilomotor excitation as an ictal sign has rarely been studied with chronic intracerebral EEG recordings. This is the first direct demonstration of a right temporal neocortical origin of pilomotor seizures related to an infiltrating tumor. This technical note is titled High Viscosity Polymethyl Methacrylate Cement for Endoscopic Anterior Cranial Base Reconstruction. It was written by Jennifer A. Moliterno and co-authors. Endoscopic endonasal transsphenoidal surgery is an effective, minimally invasive approach for the resection of anterior skull-base tumors. Cerebrospinal leakage is a common complication, and repair of the anterior skull base defect with alloplastic materials has been used to minimize the risk of postoperative cerebrospinal rhinorrhea and meningitis. Injectable cements, such as low-viscosity polymethyl methacrylate, are useful for cranial base reconstruction because they are easy to shape to the contour of the defect. These low-viscous materials, however, are more susceptible to leakage into the nasal cavity, prohibiting their use, and are prone to cracking upon hardening. Cement extravasation not only obstructs the operator's view during placement, but is also associated with significant local and systemic complications. High-viscosity polymethyl methacrylate cement and its specialized delivery system have been shown to be safe and effective in human applications. Moreover, its constant high viscosity significantly reduces cement leakage and its associated complications. We hypothesized that this type of cement would therefore be ideal for endoscopic transsphenoidal surgery repair of anterior skull base defects. The authors report their experiences using this cement to reconstruct the anterior skull base in 12 patients following endoscopic transsphenoidal surgery. Its unique putty-like consistency is easy to work, malleable, does not leak into the nasal cavity, does not aspirate into suction tubing, and hardens without cracks in less than 10 minutes. 8 months after surgery, none of the patients had suffered postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leaks or infections. The authors conclude that high-viscosity polymethyl methacrylate may be an excellent choice for reconstructing the anterior skull base if needed. This clinical article is titled, A Phase II Study of Anti-Epidermal Growth Factor Receptor Radioimmunotherapy in the Treatment of Glioblastoma Multiforme. It was written by Lena Lee and colleagues. Glioblastoma multiforme is an aggressive, rapidly progressing central nervous system tumor with limited treatment options. The epidermal growth factor receptor, or EGFR, is a potential treatment target since overexpression is seen in 60 to 90% of high-grade gliomas. This prospective phase II study tested the efficacy of adjuvant radioimmunotherapy with 125 iodine-labeled anti-EGFR murine antibody in patients with newly diagnosed glioblastoma multiforme. 192 patients were enrolled and treated with 3 weekly intravenous injections of anti-EGFR radioimmunotherapy 6 weeks after surgery and radiation therapy. The median age was 53 years, and the median Karnofsky Performance Scale score was 80. The overall median survival was 15.7 months. The 2-year survival rate was 25.5%. Prior to the use of temozolomide, 97 patients were treated with anti-EGFR radioimmunotherapy alone. In this subgroup, the median survival was 14.5 months, and the 2-year survival rate was 22%. No grade 3 or 4 toxicity was seen with the administration of anti-EGFR radioimmunotherapy. The results of this large phase II study compared favorably with the recent European Organization for Research and Treatment of Cancer trial, in which the median survival of the winning temozolomide arm was 14.6 months and the 2-year survival rate was 26.5%. Anti-EGFR radioimmunotherapy is safe and may be the next efficacious treatment for patients with glioblastoma multiforme. Further investigation in a randomized phase 3 setting should be pursued. This clinical article is titled, The Predictive Power of Balloon Shape and Change of Sensory Functions on Outcome of Percutaneous Balloon Compression for Trigeminal Neuralgia. It was written by Per Asplund and co-authors. When treating trigeminal neuralgia, percutaneous balloon compression is an increasingly popular surgical option. However, the results in terms of pain relief vary between different studies. To further improve the results, the authors conducted a careful study of the surgical procedure, and they analyzed the impact of balloon shape, position, volume, and compression time on duration of the therapeutic effect. The sensory side effects associated with this treatment and how they relate to surgical parameters were also analyzed. The authors reviewed the medical records and intraoperative radiographs obtained from 87 balloon compressions. The most important factor for achieving long-lasting pain relief was the shape of the balloon. A pear-shaped balloon resulted in far better surgical results than other balloon shapes. A pear-shaped balloon was also significantly associated with increased thresholds for percutaneous electrical stimulation in the immediate postoperative period, but the sensory function was normalized at the late follow-up. A similar outcome was found for standard clinical testing. In this paper, the authors have demonstrated that obtaining a pear-shaped balloon when performing percutaneous balloon compression for trigeminal neuralgia results in longer pain relief than non-pear-shaped balloons. Other surgical parameters seemed less important with respect to pain relief.
Thank you for listening. Sign up in iTunes to get all our weekly podcasts delivered straight to you. To read all JNS articles published this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.